This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCO.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Welcome to this episode of Herding Code, being recorded on February 10th, 2010. Tonight's guest is a repeat guest, Javier Lozano. He's an ASP.NET insider and an MVP that specializes in ASP.NET system architecture and training. He helped co-found the Iowa.NET Users Group as well as the Iowa Code Camp. And he's also the author of an open source project called MVC Turbine. So tell us the 30-second elevator pitch for this project.
All right. So MVC Turbine helps you to build modular applications on top of ASP.NET MVC. That's pretty much it.
That's a short short elevator ride.
Well, I've been practicing. I've been practicing my Twitter pitch. So essentially, that's the best thing. That's the best way I can put it.
You haven't been to the Glenn Block School of Pitching, have you?
No, I have not.
Yeah, that's good. Keep things concise. So how do things get modular, or what would make this? What would be the advantages to using this?
Oh, well, the advantages of using this, and actually, if you know, you said I was a repeat guest, and when last time I talked with you guys about how to, I was using ASP.NET MVC to build a product, and around the time, and I realized that doing that just on top of MVC or web forms in general is kind of hard. So I kind of went out of my way and figured out, hey, I have these bunch of random things that somehow need to magically come together. So how do we address that? And that's kind of where the concept of MVC Turbine came to be. And essentially was like, how easily can we add features to an application without reinventing the wheel or without getting into the bowels of the MVC runtime?
So how do you do that?
How do I do that? Pixie dust and miracles.
Who did
and
a you lot bribe of... at Microsoft?
Well, actually, I do that by tying into the extensibility points of MVC, right? So essentially, the way MVC Turbine plugs into your application is that you have to inherit from a class called Turbine Application. And essentially, all that does, it sets up a set of processes, or essentially a pipeline for the app. And the only way I could do that was through extending HTTP application. So essentially, you know, whatever your global ASAX inherits from, now we'll have to inherit from your app from this other type. And from then on, you know, that pipeline kicks in and it does MVC, quote unquote, related things, such as setting up controller factories, setting up view engines. I have this extensibility point called a blade to deal with the whole, quote unquote, turbine model. And so it goes through that pipeline and then allows you to do all the different things.
All right, so you mentioned controller factories, and I know you've got some code in there to work with IOC containers. Do you support Ninject and Structure Map and Unity, or do you have something that you rolled your own with?
No, actually, I do support, like you said, support Ninject, Structure Map, Unity, and Winsor. And essentially, all what I've done is, as I was building this, kind of give you a bit of a history on it. I originally had written it to be nothing but Winsor. So everything, you know, Winsor was sort of baked into it. But I found out that apparently .NET developers really, really love their IOC containers, and they're very opinionated about which one's better than the other one. So to sort of have the project build traction, I kind of stepped away and said, hey, how can I make this, you know, generic? So the structure map guys can have their piece of the pie, and the Ninject guys and the Winsor guys and the whoever's using Unity can use that. So I sort of built a sort of facade on top of the IOC containers, similar to what Common Service Locator, the that open source project in CodePlex has. Mm-hmm. I built it on top of that, but that's great for type resolution. I needed something generic for wiring things into the container. So I kind of had to, at that point, roll my own register API, you could call it that, for filtering things into the underlying container. And it's good and it's bad, and I've gotten feedback based on that. So
yeah, well, that was one question I know was, you know, like, isn't this just IOC for IOC? Like, I know you had that question for Rob Connery. Is that one of the bits of feedback you've gotten on it?
Oh, yes, it has been. Yeah, that has to be, I guess, the biggest argument I've heard from people saying it's like, hey, you know, why are you making this harder than it needs to be? And essentially, I'm not, right? So that's kind of a sort of a pseudo byproduct of trying to build composition for ASP.NET or ASP.NET MVC in general, was that I needed to have a way that I could register types into the system, because the engine, you know, Turbine needed to know about controllers, view engines, model binders, and any other things that is MVC related. And I needed to do it in a way so I can easily register those into them. So I kind of had to build that on top of it. And at the same time, you know, to support this blade structure and the ability to add these components on the fly, you know, that needed to be there so the plumbing can just all magically work. And that was not the intent. That was more of, again, the byproduct.
I guess one other question too is, you know, if you are a facade for a lot of different IOCs, do you end up just being kind of the lowest common denominator for all of them? Do you end up stripping out all the special features of each IOC to do that?
Yes, I do, actually. And that's the hardest thing, because my job is not to really replace the IOC. My job was sort of more of the, hey, let's look at the issue, which is, you know, composition and all this, you know, as application building. And how can I do that the least way possible? Because I don't want to rewrite all this code, right? That problem has been solved, and it has been solved by people who are way smarter than me. So how can I sort of piggyback on that? But at the same time, I have been able, the way I've done things is I allowed you to, if you really want to leverage your IOC, you truly can. And I have a blog post about that out of my blog that shows you how you can inject, you know, a Windsor container into Turbine after you've done all the registration inside of it. So you can use the Fluent API from Windsor or the Fluent API from Ninject and Structure Map to do all the funky service configuration, you know, singleton, specific object instances and all that, and allowed you to say, okay, you know what, Turbine, don't worry about doing all this extra stuff. You should only worry about controllers, view engines, and these little minute things. But the core of my app should be around what I care about in my IOC. So it's sort of, it tries to appease to those who care about that, and it also appeases to those who really don't care about it and say, you know what, you do all this heavy lifting for me and just go ahead. So
I think one of the criticisms of the MVC framework is that it has a lot of extensibility points. That's not the criticism. That's a good point of it. But maybe that if it was built with an IOC in mind, it would have been engineered to work against something like the Common Service Locator, and you wouldn't have to worry about all these disparate extensibility points. You could have just plugged something in. Is that sort of where MVC Turbine is fitting?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head, is that originally when I saw this problem was, you know, the source code obviously for ASP.NET MVC is available. So I thought about, hey, let's just take the source code and kind of spin it off and do my own thing. And then I realized that that's a complete waste of time and it's pointless to do that. So I decided, all right, let's see how we can plug into those different things. At that point, it was really, is what if IOC was banked into ASP.NET MVC? And taking that perspective, it was more of kind of jumping through the hoops because of the way the framework was laid out and some of the pipeline is there, that some decisions had to be made with at least my implementation of MVC Turbine. I know there's other places other projects out there, such as MVC Extensibility, that shows you how to, you know, kind of one-off it per container. But it's just, there's really no common way of plugging into that. And I wish there was a better story around it. As it is, MVC, you know, the pattern and the features that it provides is a kind of a tall order for people to comprehend and to kind of get around, that even adding IOC or that concept into the picture, I think would have made things even more complicated, and we would have had even more debates about web forms versus MVC versus IOC versus whatever. So I guess it was good they left it out and kind of simplified things, but also for those who want more out of it, it would have been great to have it. And I guess projects like FUBU MVC kind of help you tackle some of those pieces.
So is there anything that you wanted to do, but you just couldn't fit in because of some constraint of the MVC framework?
I haven't reached that point yet, because it's been sort of been baby steps to it. I would say that I haven't, like, if you look at MVC 2 and some of the features that they've added, I haven't reached that point yet because I've been avoiding that altogether since, as we know, things have been changing on, you know, from RC, RC2, and so forth. So I kind of been putting that on the back burner and saying, I will tackle this once it's baked, once it ships. So, I mean, that could be the fact going forward. So far, I haven't run into any issues just because I haven't allowed the tentacles, quote unquote, like Rob Connery mentioned a while back, of MVC Turbine to get into your application. As it is, by me defining a pipeline or process of things get done, I figure that was opinionated enough, or that was me saying specific things that I figured, hey, just leave it there, and hopefully, you know, people won't get too mad. But I don't know, I haven't reached that point yet.
Can you talk a little bit about some of the stuff you've built around action filters and inferred actions?
Sure. So action filters and inferred actions, that was actually something I rolled out individually a while back as a sort of a proof of concept. Is if you look at the standard, you know, file new MVC project, and you go look at the about action, right, on the home controller, the whole purpose of that about action is just to render a view. It really doesn't add any value at all whatsoever to your application, because all it says, hey, here's, you know, I exist here, and you're going to return a view by the same name of the action. End of story. And from that perspective, is okay, it's good to have, but it's really unnecessary code. It's just kind of blah. So the whole purpose of an inferred action is to allow you to just provide those features or that piece of the application without doing any extra work. So what I do using an action invoker and plugging into actually the controller execution is I say, hey, here's a new action invoker, which will use the same functionality as the out-of-the-box action invoker. And if no action is found by, you know, if no, like, about action is found, if there is no method that exists in the controller by that, I'm just going to infer that you want to just to have the view rendered. So let me do that for you. In other words, let me create all the guts and the plumbing that it needs to exist for me to tell the MVC runtime to say, oh yeah, the view is about, and go, you know, go on its merry way. So that was kind of the whole gist behind that. Why is there a need for that? And how can we, again, trim code? Because in my perspective, less code is better, right? The more it's baked in and the more it does that for you, slightly better, because it's less for you to worry about and less to maintain, or less for people to mess up. So that was kind of the whole action behind that. Keep it lean.
That's something when I was first looking at it, like the IOC plugin is very cool in that it makes it like you almost have no excuse not to use IOC because it's like two lines of code, you know, but the inferred actions was something when I saw that, I was like, this is awesome, because like you're saying, you can write an app with very, very little controller. I mean, just all the like controller actions that do nothing but say return view, like you're saying, it just gets rid of all of that. It's pretty slick.
So one of the questions I had about the inferred actions, because I haven't actually played with them much. I've been pretty explicit in my actions so far. Is I'm wondering if you use that with a strongly typed view, would there be a way to, you know, grab any any parameters that are passed along to the controller, almost like inferring that and going in and providing some kind of a service layer that you insert in or inject in and have that actually do a query and populate whatever view model or model is typed to that view.
Sure. So you've now outlined the true flaw of an inferred action, which is at that point it's really an inferred action. I didn't want to use the word dumb action in the sense that it's only the view, right? That's all you get.
Yeah, it's just like a static page, essentially, exactly. Is what it turns into.
Yeah, M is completely gone. Now, what you're saying, that's totally possible. And that will require a little more finesse on the action invoker and the way it handles those actions, for you to say, hey, here's the inferred action. It's again, to stick to the example of about, here's what it is. Do I have anything that I have to consider for rendering or passing to this view? And that's totally doable. And could be easily implemented, but I just didn't go that route just because I was lazy because I didn't want to go down that rabbit hole. And second, it was something that at the time I didn't see as a needed feature, but it's totally doable. I can tell you right now that one of the things that inferred actions doesn't support, they don't support the ability to say to apply any attributes to it, because again, that's done at the method level, at the actual action level, rather than just sort of passing into view. So if you try to secure it, if you try to log it, or if you try to do anything that you would do as an any other action, that's not going to apply, because again, it sort of says it takes the stance of I'm not listening, I'm just going to do this. I'm just going to infer this unit of work. But again, all that could be added later on. I just didn't do it for simplicity.
Would you do that just by having a stub method that then allows you to set the return model as well as put any attributes on that method?
That's a good question. You could do it that way. Are you talking about specifically the implementation of it or
Well, yeah, I was hoping we could just bang it out while we're on the call. Here, I'll go ahead and type. We'll just pair. Let's go.
That's right. I do have the source up, so I could implement that as a next feature for it. I really don't know. I really don't know just because of the usability perspective. And the reason why I say usability is because I'll tie it to another feature that Turbine has, and that is which is with injectable filters. So now, you know, one of the things that I know that Kevin had mentioned before was, I wish I could, you know, spin up my filters out of an IOC container, you know, so I can have construction injection and so forth. So Turbine allows you to do that because Turbine will always yield to the container. So it will always ask to the container, hey, is this present here? And if so, I'm going to pull it from there and go on my merry way. And the way I implemented right now, I'm not really happy because it's very, very obtuse. You know, you have to use a type of sort of syntax to get it all wired up and working. And for that, I kind of see more of using a fluent approach, saying, hey, for this action, implement these these attributes and so on, and allowing you to chain them. I can see that taking that for the inferred actions to say, hey, for this inferred action, which may come down the pipeline or may not, apply these models, you know, in case someone asks for it, you know, given these models and using these services and apply these attributes and do this and do that. Ideally, I would like to kind of go down that route because it gives you more power than just sort of just stuffing it in there. And I really don't know how that will play out in the actual source, just because I need to step back and reevaluate how the Turbine Action Controller class was done at whatever time of the wee hours of the night, and see how I can retrofit it into that.
So as you're talking about that, then I'm thinking of the other dynamic things you could do. Since, you know, like for instance, I know routing, Phil Hack wrote some things up recently, or we're supposed to call him that guy on this podcast, right?
That's right, exactly. That guy. Phil Hack, that guy.
So that guy, he wrote up this this thing where you could define your routes in an external class and then pull them in. So I'm wondering if there's things where you could do that kind of extensibility there as well, and then, you know, even perhaps dynamically build things up or pull, you know, configure things depending on, I don't know, something, current air temperature.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Yeah, actually, there is a way, and even right now, I've provided a very simplistic way for you to register your routes, and I cleverly named it iRoute Registrator.
Oh, that's right. I remember seeing that. Yep.
Which allows you to pass in the essentially an iRoute Registrator is nothing more than a marker interface, and that's what Turbine has. It has a lot of marker interfaces that you can implement. And then the runtime will magically pick out of the, you know, out of thin air and say, oh, your route, you know, iRoute Registrator, I'm going to call this method and essentially pass in, the route table collection, you know, for you to register your own routes. The issue with that is that it doesn't do it in any specific order. It just kind of says, hey, get me everything that's an iRoute Registrator and bam, you know, I'm going to call you in and out. And the way routing works is first come, first serve, which kind of, you know, kind of has an issue with that. And so from that perspective, you know, kind of circling back, you could do it with an iRoute Registrator. You know, at that point you can say, hey, call to this dynamic thing that compiles code from the app underscore code, like Phil did, and then populate all that into it. That's very easy to do, very doable. But at that point is where does that chunk of routes or structure fall into the overall stack of the application, which is, I think, the bigger problem.
One other thing that I thought about adding to it, and I thought about going in and doing this on past MVC projects that I've worked on, we've overridden the base class kind of like you have for controllers, except that we had a default to a JSON result if you didn't specify like the type or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought about adding that to MVC Turbine, because a lot of times, you know, you want to be able to call your controller actions, but you don't want to have that branching thing in there, or you don't want to decorate it with the attributes and that kind of stuff, you know. Or well, we saw ourselves starting to go down these things where we'd have, you know, get X and then we'd have get X as JSON methods. Yep. On controllers, and we hated that because
mm-hmm.
It was basically just calling up and then saying, okay, give me the model and then serialize it.
Yep.
And so we just thought, well, we'll just put that in and make it a convention that if you call it and you don't specify a return type, you know, when you're calling it or a MIME type, or if you send in a MIME type of, you know, JSON, X type JSON, then send them back that. And that worked out pretty well for us.
Yeah. Actually, it's funny to say, because we've done that too, not necessarily at the Turbine level. We've done it with on action executed event of the controller. And at that point, we examined, okay, here's the request, and look at that MIME type and do it that way. But I know I totally agree with you. That's something that could be added there as a, you know, a nice to have out of the box to just, you know, map those MIME types to whatever actions they need to be performed.
I'm supposed to ask you about FoxPro. We got a question from a Twitter from Matt Slay. Is it Matt Slay or is it Matt Slay?
I'm sorry, but this sounds like a bit of an abusive question, doesn't it?
Is this the abusive questions from Twitter?
I think it is. I sure think it is.
Awesome. Honestly, you know what? I know that FoxPro has a fox for the logo, and beyond that, I've never had an experience working with it. And I like to keep it that way. I think that this is an Alan Stevens sort of questions.
We'll just call him up. Hey, Alan.
What? Tell me about FoxPro. Now, FoxPro on NVC, that's a totally different question.
Just add a blade, right?
I think that'd be no add problem. A blade. Just throw it in there. I hope I don't get sued by IBM, or, you know, just, you know, to add a blade. Kind of wanted to add.
Well, no, I think that's pretty much common now. HP's got them.
Oh, there you go. So add a blade, or a blade, as I've heard some of my friends call it. A blade. Yeah.
Now, speaking of people that are waiting in line to sue you, though, there's a few others. There's some other. This is my transition. There's some other extensibility frameworks. Like there's System Web MPC Extensibility from, I'm not going to say his name correctly, KMR. I'll just call him KMR. I should try and say this right. Qazi Manzoor Rashid, I guess.
Oh, yes.
So, and there's probably others out there, like some extensibility frameworks. And I'm just wondering, like, you know, how you, if, you know, if you gain any inspiration / steal from those, or, you know, like what you think of some of these other frameworks, if you've looked at them.
What do I think of the other frameworks? I think that they are great, you know, because, you know, that's things we're all trying to address the same issue, which is extensibility on MVC, right? And actually, specifically system.web.mvc, that extensibility from Kinsey Mansour Rashid, he actually had a lot of good feedback about, hey, you know, you're not doing this well. Like a good example of that was the filter. And I totally agree. You know, the way I'm handling filters is could be better. And I hope to address that in the next version. And everybody has something to say about it, and everybody's saying it a different way. I think the best thing we can do, and you know, I'm open for this, is saying, you know, MVC Turbine has this, you know, MVC that extensibility has this, and I know there's another one that his Twitter name is Tojans. I don't remember what he's the actual framework, extensibility framework he's working on.
Can you spell that?
Tojans. I'm probably butchering the name. Tojans. Tojans.
Okay.
And he has a couple blog posts of some kind of what he's trying to do, and even Sharp architecture, right? Some of the stuff that that's being done in that project. Everybody's touching the whole subject of extensibility. How do we get more out of MVC that we're currently doing? And honestly, I think there's no right answer. I think we're all saying the same thing, you know, sort of potato potato. And I, you know, could this be rolled up to a higher project? I think so. Ideally, you know, I think, Scott K brought this up earlier on. It's like, I wish this was just baked in, right? So I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to have this one-off thing. And it'd be good just to have it that way. But, you know, that's a different order, right?
Well, I think that this, at least the basic extensibility, like the I route register and, there's another one, I service registration. Thank you. and when we had that guy on the show before, we asked him, you know, I told him point blank, I was like, you know, I want some, you know, I want some of this IOC stuff baked in. I want it, you know, you don't have to support everyone out of the box, but you can at least support Unity and, you know, abstract it out to the point where I can put my own in, you know, write, you know, and Ninject and structure map, and everyone else can write their own providers for it, or someone can. And so, you know, I'm kind of hoping that's the whole reason you're going to be off in lots of rooms at the MVP Summit. They're all going to be talking to you about coming on board and, you know, and hiring you like they did Louis Desjardins.
Louis Desjardins, yes. I don't know.
I say that. He says Louis Desjardins, so Louis Desjardins. So.
Yep.
I just try to make him sound French or Quebecan or something, I guess.
Quebecan? Is that even a word?
Quebecan?
Yeah, not Quebecan.
New Orleansian.
They get all mad when you say that, and they go...
Makes me think of the dish turducken.
Well, yeah, a Quebecan is what you get when you take a North American and stuff a Frenchman inside. You put like a Belgian on the inside of that, and you bake it for like 7 hours at 400.
Ouch.
Sounds tasty.
Especially on a nice cold winter night, right?
Exactly. Case Scott knows about that.
It's so cold here, the Amish people are buying electric blankets.
That's funny.
Didn't.
Exactly.
Hey, you could play your own rim shot there on the drums if you were all set up for this.
I could. I would have to take the mic downstairs. Hey, but back to the question of filters.
Mm-hmm.
How would I go about, let's say I had some sort of logging filter or some filter that talks to the database. And of course, I want to be able to get it. I want that filter to somehow pull something out of an ISD container to actually do that work that would write to a file system or something. How would that work with MVC Turbine? Does it make it easier?
Yeah, it makes it, very good question. There's two perspectives on that. I'll give you the V2.0 version, and I'll give you the V2.1 mm-hmm. RC CTP 2008 Windows Live Writer version of that. Is that with V2.0, essentially is I have an attribute where you tell it the type of filter that you want to implement. And essentially, at that point, you will inherit from this abstract class, which is I injectable filter attribute, and say, okay, I'm this logging attribute.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, you can say, here's the type of this, and it could be an I action filter, an I exception filter, or whatever that is. And Turbine will then query whenever the actual action is being executed. It will honor, quote unquote, all of the out of the box filters or any filter that like MVC Contrib will have, which is filter plus code or logic. Mm-hmm. It will do all that, and then it will ask that same method, hey, do you have any injectable filters, anything that should come out of the pipeline, you know, out of the container? And at that point, it says, oh, yeah, here's this one. Here's this logging attribute. And then at that point, it will go out and say, all right, go get me this type. And it will spin it out. And it will spin it out and cast it to the filter, to the right filter that needs to be, you know, mm-hmm. I action, I exception. And then at that point, it will then execute, and it will merge it along with the other filters.
Oh, okay. Okay, I gotcha.
Okay. And at that point, from the perspective on the runtime and the way MVC works, it's just like it's there, mm-hmm. right? It's just like executing. The only downside of it is that you really can't express any parameters to the filter mm-hmm. because injectable filter only says, hey, what's the filter type? Give me the system dot type.
Right.
For it. So you can't do it. So that's sort of the V2. And that's what I mean that filters in the current version V2 of MVC Turbine kind of suck because I don't give you that much power. Mm-hmm. With MVC 2.1, I'm actually going to say, all right,
Wait just a sec. You said with MVC 2.1, are you saying with Turbine 2.1?
Sorry, Turbine 2.1, yes.
Okay.
Sorry. With MVC Turbine 2.1, I'm going to yield to the other approach, which is people are always going to have their filters and their logic in the same class. And at that point, if you have any properties, so you have an iLogger, right, for the log attribute mm-hmm. that could be injected, at that point, I will say, all right, give me every filter that's there. And then this is kind of the method that's used on any other IOC containers, build up. So go build up that attribute. So if any of the properties of that attribute that match anything that's registered in the container, go ahead and set those automatically. So
okay. So
at that point, it allows you to have, you know, log attribute. You know, you can pass in a string or whatever values you want in there, and you can actually new up that metadata, and mm-hmm. you can have your iLogger, your iLogger logger, you know, property with the plain getters and setters. Turbine will then inject that implementation of that iLogger into that attribute for you. So you don't have to go out of your way and do that. It will
gotcha.
Just do it for you. And I guess that just came out of people wanting to do a method that way and so forth, and me not coming up with a better way of doing it. And ideally, the best way to do it would be through a Fluent interface, saying, "Hey, for this method, for this action, apply this filter with these parameters and so forth."
So that approach has always interested me. That's sort of getting rid of, if I understand it correctly, that type of approach would be getting rid of attributes.
Yeah, it can.
Right.
It can completely get rid of, you know, attributes and say, perform, you know, for this action, do this. And actually, Jeremy Skinner, who mm-hmm. is very involved in the MVC Contrib project, sent me a prototype of, hey, of how he was approaching that same approach for filters. And so, you know, all kudos goes for him for making me think that way. And I think that'd be for those who care about that sort of approach would be feasible for. But, you know, the issue with it, even with the issue with the MVC framework, is that it tries to please many masters, you know, that many different development approaches, and everybody does it certain way, which Turbine kind of tends to yield for, you know, so that, you know, if you like this approach, you like that approach. I essentially don't want to exclude anyone. That I think it would be added for those who feel very adamant about, you know, I need a Fluent interface, or I need a different way of expressing this intent for this action, for this method call.
Right. Well, and it gives it a different feel, too. It gives it more of a chain of responsibility feel than, you know, declaratively decorating these actions and controllers.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it definitely does. And, you know, and I know that other people out there who are, you know, whole are pro MVC and so forth have said, you know, do we really need actions? You know, do we
right.
need to do that perspective? And, you know, that's definitely an approach that could be taken as well. And that's totally a different path to take, and, you know, more, you know, kind of like FUBU has around behavior and sort of, and like that chaining, and, you know, this is what's going to happen when you know the stars and the moon align and everything, then you know the execution will take place. That's definitely a different approach, but it's not an approach that everyone will take, right? So the question is like, do you really alienate every, you know, a certain group and say, here's the way they're going to do it, or do you try to be, you know, a jack of all trades, master of none? And that's completely up to the author of, you know, whatever extensibility framework is building around MVC or not building around MVC.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm trying to get on the emerging bingo card for Herding Code by mentioning MEF on every podcast, and I'm not sure I have, so I'm going to again just for sure. But I saw I saw that there's an issue on the MVC Turbine issues list of using MEF for engine extensions. And I'm just wondering, you know, as we're talking about different ways to plug things in, if you think MEF would, you know, be another, like how that would work, and if that would, you know, as we're talking about doing things as opposed to using just decorating with attributes, if you think MEF would help with that.
Actually, I think it would, and I've had a lot of talks with Glenn about it, and I told K. Scott this the other day when I was helping him through his turbine issues. Essentially, the way Turbine is done right now is it's using the IOC container for everything, right? So the to kind of do roll call on the marker interfaces, I have an iBlade, which is the component, right, of Turbine. I have an iRoute registrator, which we talked about, an iService registrator. And those are the main ones that kind of make the wheels turn. And all of those are actually spun out of the container. So what Turbine does, you know, this is kind of in the bowels of the beast. I load all the assemblies that you have in your bin directory into the app domain for your application. And then I query every single type in that app domain saying, hey, are you one of these three guys? You know, and if you are, I need you to come over here and, you know, perform these tasks. Ideally, I would like for MEF to handle all of that, just because Glenn and team obviously has spent a lot of time around that problem, and that's the whole purpose of extensibility. And that's what really Turbine is, like in its composition, extensibility, that I'll, you know, outsource, quote unquote, that to Glenn and team to allow me to hydrate those objects, and then be able to get the blades, get the service locators, implementations, and the add route registrators back. The only issue that I ran with it when I was first looking into it, and that was just my ignorance with MEF, was that right now a blade or a service, anything that implements these marker interfaces, to put it the simplest way, could have a dependency on something else. So, like for example, a blade could, like the logging blade, to go back to this attribute example, could have a dependency on log4net XML configurator or something, you know, some that specific type. And right now, since everything gets hydrated out of the same container, if you register with that container and you tell it, hey, you know, XML configurator, you're a singleton, or you're this, or you're that, it will all magically work because everything will get hydrated out of that. The issue that I was running into was, okay, if I have MEF handle this, handle the hydration of these objects, am I losing a feature that now I can't inject anything via constructor into these other types? And there is something in MEF that will allow me to do that. And I don't remember what it's actually called. Is it export type? It's an attribute you can actually apply to your types to have it say it's an interface rather than a concrete. I don't remember what it actually called.
Gosh, export type does sound right.
And essentially, that will be applied at like at those interfaces, like the iBlade and route registrator. So that way you won't have to know about MEF at all, right? Turbine will have a dependency on MEF. You can still use your IOC container for everything. And I think that's sort of the best of both worlds, and kind of will hopefully show, hey, you know, here's an application that can use both MEF and an IOC, whatever that will be, you know, Winsor, Ninjack, StructureMap, Unity. And they can both coexist. And from everything I talked to Glenn and some of the demos that kind of him and I have paired up on, it's actually pretty cool because there's actually, by having it that way, MEF allows you to build a bridge between any type that gets resolved from within that catalog, you know, from when you tell it, hey, you know, export, I said export provider, export type provider, hydrate that. It can actually say, it can actually have a contract to say, I need to go figure out whether this type exists in me or something external. And at that point, I figured, hey, I already have a common interface for resolving types. I can plug that in, and that interface is the facade for all these other containers. And at that point, it can hydrate whatever type from any underlying container underneath it. So in essence, you know, kind of not to talk a lot about it, you can still not. No, I know. It's like I hear Scott K in the back just snoozing off.
There's something about talking about meth that just encourages long diet or monologues.
It's all those attributes. No, I'm kidding. That essentially it will function the same way as an IOC as the IOC implementation of Turbine would. That is my tweet answer to that. So yes, that's all I have to say about that.
Import more words. So MVC Turbine is hosted on codeplex.com. How's that working out for you?
It's working well. And I say well because of, you know, there's a source code out there and people can check it out and do whatever they want with it. It's not working so well on the way I try to develop things. And that is more of me trying to do a continuous commit. And I'm not sure if you guys saw this in my blog a while back, but I had a way, I had a Rube Goldberg solution for how you can use Git SVN and SVN Bridge to go against TFS. And I know, it's crazy.
That's awesome. Get to TFS.
Did you throw like Perforce and Mercurial and Visual Source Safe in there somewhere?
And FoxPro.
I mean, exactly. And
maybe a little Live Mesh.
Funny enough, I did use Live Mesh to kind of replicate my Git repos, but that's a totally different story.
Oh, there we go.
I want to be the first to ask the Mercurial question, so I'm going to interrupt you mid-sentence before K. Scott can sneak it in there.
Yes, scooped. Scooped. Psych. Advantage, John. So I tried that, and it wasn't obviously the best thing. And just because I wanted to do more commits, I wanted to be able to, because I tend to go on tangents when I'm working on these different things, and I think everybody does who is passionate about, you know, trying to get this thing not just right, but it's just, you know, acceptable for other people. And I wasn't getting that, obviously, with Subversion, because I was getting a lot of commits and so forth. So what I decided to do is I decided to move the Turbine source code out of CodePlex into GitHub, just because of some of the flexibilities that Git gives individuals, committing, branching, and, you know, all that sleuth, and just use CodePlex for the bugs, the feedback, the releases, in that perspective. Mm. So now onto your Mercurial question, John.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, that's been a common thing, right? People will set up, people will love the project management stuff on CodePlex is really nice. The voting on issues, the discussion stuff, the wiki stuff, I mean, mm-hmm. It's all pretty good. So that's been kind of a common theme that people have, you know, hosted the project on CodePlex and then put their source somewhere else. Now with Mercurial, you know, I mean, as a similar DVCS, did I say that right? Version control. Yes, I did. DVCS. I mean, have you looked at, you know, would that work for you to move your source back? Would there be any advantage, that kind of stuff?
Well, I haven't fully looked into it. I'll be completely honest with it. But, you know, GitHub is more than just Git, right? More than just here's this distributed, version control system, or DVCS, as been previously stated. It is more of the community and the ability of people to collaborate and, you know, and sort of own this and have them be their own piece of the pie that is also interesting to me. Now, that's also assuming that people care about MVC Turbine and they want to do something with it. And I guess I don't know. You know, I'll have to spend the time and take a look at it, whether Mercurial, because, you know, I know that my workflow has changed from the way I'm trying to develop things, not just certainly for Turbine, for other stuff, that I am looking beyond Subversion. You know, Subversion was good for certain things, but now I'm doing crazier, random things that I know Git will be or not really Git, but Git slash Mercurial would be more fitting for that sort of approach. And maybe, you know, maybe I should evaluate that at all. Because I know that even Jimmy Bogard was looking in on that for AutoMapper. You know, AutoMapper is actually very big in the .NET space, especially in the MVC world. That he was like, hey, you know, I was thinking of moving to GitHub. Should I consider that, or should I stay in CodePlex with Mercurial? And that's something that I guess I just have to kind of put my hands into it and see how it fits and how it feels.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I've seen, just, I don't know if this is a side tangent here, but the whole like upstream commit thing is something that I just didn't understand. I've been using Git for like a week and a half now, just for my personal work, and it's great to be able to like do quick check-ins locally and then push stuff, you know, as you go, and you can have a whole tree of upstreams. It's really kind of a, I don't know, it's a whole higher level to committing over just what Subversion does, where you're just checking in and out of one repository.
Yep, and honestly, and that's why I love it for like Turbine, is because I'm, you know, I go down this path and say, hey, it'd be cool to add this feature, and then I don't want to commit because it's like, crap, now what happens? Somebody goes after that revision and checks it out, and they're getting a totally different idea than they should be, but I want to commit just in case my hard drive goes kaput. You know, and just, I don't want to start it locally, and I want to do it, or, you know, in a different perspective. I want to do differences. And at that point, you know, Git felt good from that perspective. So that's why I started looking at it. I looked into Mercurial briefly, but every time I guess I succeeded to peer pressure, and every time I said, hey, what about Mercurial? It's like, Mercurial's for wusses. You should be looking at Git. You know, and at that point, it's like, okay, I'll go look at Git. You know, that's just me being a wuss, I guess. But CVS is where it's at, I hear.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you use the source gear bridge through TFS.
Exactly. Run this patch file.
CVS is a mature platform, and it's the right tool for the right job.
I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying that, you know, I'm just kind of, everybody always picks on CVS.
Oh, and man. You don't just have to pick up on something because it's the newest and the latest, some shiny thing.
The first
transactional commits or something.
The first open source project one of the first I got involved with, I was like, hey, I'll help set this up on SourceForge and CVS. And I like spent like an entire week of nights like doing pointless crap. And finally, I'm like, I'm done. I'm out. I spent an entire week and got like the project set up.
But I moved the file.
That's right. And,
Why does it still think it's there? Yeah. Hey, it was the different times.
Yeah. Yep.
Different needs.
My team's not smart enough to understand DVCS. We have to stay on CVS. I'm just applying the usual arguments to old technologies.
See, what we'll do, we'll just use an Excel spreadsheet to track our check-ins and check-outs.
Yes. Zip files named after the date and time.
You know, and with TFS, you can actually write an extension. So whenever you commit something, it will actually generate
that Excel spreadsheet
and a SharePoint portal site for you.
Because that way the project owners and managers can have control of the bug list and the commit list.
Except in VS 2010, where we remove all of the roles, and now it will be the ultimate, people who with the ultimate license, right?
Right. Yeah, you can't do that on the pro version. It's just ultimate. I like how they moved away from, as a side note, from like database architect and tester and actual role-based thing, and just went to the whole, you know, insecure model of naming products. Like, do you want the professional or the personal, the starter home edition, or do you want ultimate?
Would you like to supersize that, sir?
That's right. See, I wonder if there's an Uber, right? Because to me, Uber is higher than ultimate. It sounds more commanding. Sounds more more of a sergeant rather than a PFC.
Sergeants get things done, man. There weren't any captains and corporals taking the beach at Normandy. Let me tell you, it was the sergeants.
That's right.
Take the hill, Sergeant Coon. Go, go, squad, move out.
You've been playing too much Team Fortress there.
That's right, that's right.
You know, what is it? No, God, now I can't.
Oh, that's Half-Life.
Counter-Strike.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Counter-Strike. Excellent.
Yeah, going old school, yo.
Back before I had kids.
Back, you know, a whole 6 years ago or so.
Half-Life 2, baby, or Half-Life.
Yep.
See, I've always wondered, when isn't Half-Life 2 really full life?
Valid point.
Always thinking.
Well, see, here's the sad part about me. I actually gave up gaming so I can gain more time in coding. So, yeah, that's how much of a nerd I am.
Why would you do that?
I don't know. It seemed logical at the time. It's like, hey, instead of me playing, you know, 2 hours a night, I could be coding for 2 extra hours a night. So
I just have to go back to that. Half-Life 2 is not actually a full life, because a half-life is the time for half of the half decay, 50% decay. So then 2 half-lives, you would lose a half and then another half. So 3/4 would be gone.
Right,
so.
But there's two of them.
Yes, but it's exponential.
So you start off with twice as much. So wouldn't that lengthen it out? I don't know.
We'll have to get some scientists involved.
I'm going to have to bust out the chemistry textbook somewhere here. I know I've got one.
Hey, so let me ask you this question.
Wait. We're talking here, Javier.
This is serious business.
God damn it. You're a guest. Show some respect.
Boy.
You're just the pretty face, man. You're the talent. Hush. And talk.
Next thing, I'll have ideas for the show. Hey, I know how you can make this better.
Hey, here's a guest you should have on.
Sergeant Kuhn, get this prisoner under control. I mean, guest.
Run along, Javier. Man talk.
Man. Okay, I'm going to go code now. No, what I was going to ask was, what do you guys think about, you know, just composition in general on ASP.NET? Like, you know, it's just, you know, I know that
I think kinda... it's painful as hell in C#. I think if you really want to do composition-based architecture, you're going to have to go to a dynamic language. Otherwise, you're just going to end up throwing around generics and interfaces and any lambdas that you can find.
Well, I mean, so the background for this question is you've done it with MVC Turbine, pretty much. Turbine. Sorry, I always call it the Turbine.
Turbine.
Hey, Javier, with your MVC Turbine, I'm wondering. No, but I mean, this is...
Is this the 1001 Arabian Nights version?
1001 routes.
So right.
You but just I mean, implement the iSeek interface?
Oh boy. But I mean, this is a compositional framework pretty much, right? I mean, you've got blades. I mean, you're composing a lot of different things. That's the background for the question, right?
Yeah, and essentially, because all of this spun out, and I'll blame Glenn again in a good way.
Okay.
Should we just call Glenn that other guy?
The other guy. And this was actually got around the ASP Insider Summit a couple years back, where we were kind of talking about how, you know, math and composition falls into this. And that's kind of where, you know, kind of he planted that seed in my mind. It's like, hey, let's think about, you know, would ASP.NET benefit from composition? That was the question he posed. And, you know, honestly, I thought back and I said, yeah, you know, I think it can. And I know I've said this out loud and in various lists and so forth, saying that, like, the provider model can hugely benefit from this, even though it's perfect right now. But it could, you know, we could, you know, gold plate the gold a little more and allow it to be more dynamic and flexible. And, you know, maybe that's, you know, how do we solve that? It's not necessarily as a product, but it's also a community.
So one way we've done composition in C# is with attributes. I mean, we throw a bunch of attributes on things, right? I mean, kind of. It's like we hack it in. Is there what? And then Scott K, you were saying, you know, it's impossible with C#. I mean, what would have to change to make it more of a?
No, not impossible.
Painful. Painful. Okay. So what would need to change? What's the big missing features? I mean,
crickets.
No, I mean, is it something where it's like you tweak a couple of things?
Well, it's the fact that everything is statically typed, and you get some benefits with that, but it makes it harder to do composition because you have to have a thing to type against. Whereas if you're doing it in a dynamic language or something like that, or something that's more message based, you know, you just have to. And maybe MEF is going to be the answer, and I think it is, because, you know, the whole idea of contracts and being able to just import things that look like this, but that aren't explicitly interfaces. If Woohoo! There we go. At least if that is still in it. I haven't looked at MEF in a while. Last I heard that's still in it, though. I think that's going to help a lot. I think it's going to change the way we architect a lot of things in C#. But, you know, just being able to pass in, you know, an object and just call a method against it makes it a lot easier to compose your app out of different parts. Having to make everything conform to specific interfaces, especially if you only care about one or two methods on an interface, you know, and you end up, I've seen some apps that have tried to do that, and they end up with, you know, three or four interfaces being implemented on different objects, including marker interfaces and things like that, simply to get an extra method in there. Or worse, you end up with interface inheritance chains, which I dislike.
Yeah.
But I've used them.
Silence.
Alrighty. So what's left? I guess we've kind of scattered what's next with MVC Turbine kind of throughout the podcast.
What's next?
Yeah. What's the next blade?
What's the next blade?
Blade for MVC Turbine.
Great question. I've actually gotten people who are actually interested on working on it besides myself. So that's a plus. I guess it's at that point it's getting people to know more of what it does, because my examples, even though are there, they don't show you from thought to, you know, implementation. So I'm going to try to do the best that I can to build documentation, whether it be, you know, in write-up form or in videos, to kind of, you know, give the aha moment for people a lot sooner. And for the code perspective and the runtime, I want to move to V3. You know, I talked about V2.1, and V2.1 was more of a reactionary, that there was some stuff in V2 that wasn't there when I shipped it. In particular, the biggest pain point is you have a blade or a dependency that has a dependency, but it sort of gets copied into the bin folder of your app, but that dependency may not. And you get this loader exceptions message, you know, go check all the, you know, the exceptions inside the loader exceptions property. It's under system.reflection, blah, blah. I forgot what the pull exception. So I made a pretty error message around that to kind of help alleviate that pain of where things have gone wrong. And obviously made things better on the registration side and so forth. So that's V2.1. V3 is moving more towards the MEF and really leaning on the IOC container to do more of that magic that it already does, then rather than the plumbing that I have right now. Even though the plumbing that I have right now works, but it might not be as sophisticated as what those containers may have. And, you know, and see where it goes from there.
Are there features in MVC2, you know, for instance, I mean, you know, the whole list, but like, especially I was thinking about the templating and model validation and any other kind of things that you're able to leverage in MVC2 that you think you might be able to pull into Turbine 3?
I really don't know yet. I've looked at some of them, and I've been so worried about the current state of 2 and 2.1. I'm trying to kind of finish that up and kind of, you know, pretty much putting it aside. But I would say that any extensibility point that MVC 2 or MVC 3 or whatever, you know, any versions on provides will be essentially looked at extensively at MVC, you know, within MVC Turbine, because, you know, that's the whole purpose, is to alleviate some of that crud or some of that junk to get these things wired up, specifically with like validation, like for MVC2. And the templating, I'm not sure how I can make that work yet. I've looked at it, but I haven't given it the due diligence that it needs. But it could happen.
Is it time for the lightning round special Blizzard edition? Frozen lightning.
All right, I have a lightning round question.
Uh-oh.
But it's got to be quick. We'll have to wrap up here soon. The lightning round question is, have you tried Google Buzz, Javier?
No, I have not. Google Buzz is not offered on Google for app domains yet, and that's all the Gmail experience that I have. I don't even log into my old Gmail account.
Ah. Mm-hmm. Anyone out there tried it?
I have.
Scott K?
Yes.
What'd you think, John?
Scott's answer is meh. That's your answer to everything. I thought it was interesting. It doesn't, I don't know. So, I mean, it would have been better if Orkut or any of the others. The nice thing that it does is you've already got a network. It uses everybody you've ever emailed or that emails you as your social network, which is good and bad. So I tried it. It's okay. I don't need another social network. So whatever.
That was kind of my feeling too.
Yeah, because I only have like 2 friends on Google.
I actually did have a bunch of activity on mine. I mean, I had my friend had recently been on a trip to England, and he had tons of pictures that he'd put up there and stuff. And I mean, it was interesting. It's just like, oh, crap, another place to check. The first thing I did was disable the email notifications and go in and say, don't share my list, whatever it is, my network publicly, because I read this article that said, you know, everybody you email or emails you is now public. And it's kind of weird. It creeped me out. Then I made a tinfoil hat. I'm just sitting in the corner of the room waiting for the feds to come.
So is this kind of like Facebook wanting to be your one true login? Is that what you're talking about?
Oh.
It's like Google, but on Wii.
That's redundant.
Can we please talk about the Facebook login, read, write, web? It's the best thing I've seen all year.
I don't know. Awesome. I feel like I'm on Jeopardy. I don't know how to put it in the form of a question.
What is the awesomest thing you've seen this year?
Okay.
Where's my Farmvilles, yo?
What is the funniest thread of comments you've ever seen, John?
Oh, I can answer this one. So Read Write Web posted an article that said something about, in the title, it said Facebook and login, and it shot up to like one of the first 3 answers on Google when you search for Facebook login. So all of a sudden the comment thread was full of people saying, I'm having trouble logging. Wait, why did they change Facebook? I just want to play Farmville. What's going on? And then all these like snarky Read Write Web people being like, this illustrates the illiteracy, blah, blah, blah. And then other people like, you know, like all caps replies like, where's my Facebook? They changed it again, bastards.
Somebody said they did like the red.
And so they went in and changed the article and put in bold, like, this is not Facebook. Click here to log into Facebook, and still the comments flow in. It's like, it's just beautiful.
To access Facebook right now, click here in red. The interweb.
And right now there are, how many comments? I'm refreshing the page. It was 200 when I last looked this afternoon. But now there are 247. And probably like 2/3 of them are like, I'm having trouble updating my Facebooks, you know? I don't know what it says, but it probably has taken away my last hopes that something like OpenID will actually on the internet.
And we wonder why viruses run rampant.
See, I have an answer
Dancing
for that.
Dancing bunnies.
see, all this is because the internet is nothing but more than a series of tubes, which allows for that kind of dissipation of information to happen. So that's my story. You know, I'm sticking to it. Nothing really? Wow. That bad.
It's a series of tubes. I don't know how to beat that.
On weed.
Hey, so Scott K, are we going to have Mexican next week?
We are. Mm. We need to go to either the taco bus or find a taco truck somewhere.
Oh, me too. Hey, are all of it?
Yes.
Okay, Scott, are you going?
Yes, if I can dig out, I should be there.
Awesome. El Taco.
He may have to take a sled dog to Atlanta to fly out, but...
But the last time I was in the Redmond area and someone wanted to go out for Mexican, I ended up at some place where they served pasta with tomato sauce on it and breadsticks. And I'm like, what?
Fazoli's? What
the hell is... No, it was... I mean, they had tacos and Mexican things on the menu, and it had a Mexican theme and margaritas. It was very weird.
No, we're going to a taco bus.
Okay.
This is a converted school bus, has a kitchen in the back, and only one person out of the 4 working there speak English.
That sounds good.
Oh, yeah. That's the way to do it. Actually, one of the that food court place that was at Bellevue.
Yeah, Crossroads.
Yeah, that's actually not that bad.
Yeah, it's not that bad, but they don't have tripe on them.
Well, yeah, but people kept talking about Crossroads, and I'm thinking like people are really going to a food court for nerd dinners, and then not nude dinners, nerd dinners. And then I went to a nerd dinner at the Crossroads, and I'm like, okay, I get it. This is pretty good here.
Yeah. Note to self, spin off nerd dinner for new dinner.
Nerd dinner. I will make so much money.
Note to self, make sure and explicitly spell out on the invite to John. N-E-R-D.
Oh, this is embarrassing. Just a minute. I got a tracksuit in my car. I'll be right back. See, yeah. When Kevin's not here, the whole thing just falls apart. He's the adult supervision. I thought it was K. Scott, but no, I guess it's Kevin.
Right now, he's too busy burning books or whatever else he can find to keep the heat going.
That's right.
He's burning all his BB-5 and action books.
It's BB-5 Unleashed. Get it right?
Unleashed.
You think it's funny, but I used Tabasco sauce as aftershave this morning, just trying to warm up.
Now, did you have any thunder snow?
No, we didn't.
Ah.
Because that's a little bit scary.
Yes, it is.
I don't even know what that is.
That sounds awesome.
That's when you actually have lightning and thunder in a snowstorm.
Now, what's a snowstorm again?
It's something you will never, ever experience. Yeah, the first time I heard about thunder snow, I was like, what the hell? And then I experienced it. I was like, this is the coolest thing ever.
It's pretty surreal.
Yeah, it is.
Especially, you know, the lightning just lights everything up and the ground's all white already. So it's instant blindness.
It's really,
anyway.
Really dark. And then poof,
you're blind. And then it's really dark.
Should I do the outro type thing?
I think so.
Okay.
Somebody save us.
Please put an end to it. Well, thank you for coming on the show. Is there anything upcoming for you? Anything exciting in the works?
Not really. Just the MVP Summit next week. So I could see some of you guys out there. I think all of you out there. And Community for MVC. You guys should check it out. You know, John presented last week, was it, John?
Yeah. Yeah, it was last week.
Yes, John presented several false, erroneous statements.
I did.
Such as, floats are not evil, they are quirky.
Yeah. They're not bad. You're bad. Hey, I have the microphone and I will say whatever I want. Yes, that is awesome. Community for MVC. So that's c4mvc.net.
Yep, that is correct. Yeah, Eric Hexter has been doing a heck job on leading that. I am part of the, I know with him started it, but I kind of been falling off the wayside just because busy at work. But he is the, you know, the guy banging the drum, getting things going and situated. So huge kudos to him for that.
We'll have to get him on, too. I've been bugging him, and I think he said, K. Scott, you've been bugging him, too, but we'll have to get him on to talk about
it. Yeah, I asked him a long time ago, actually. He said he's willing to come on, so we just have to follow up with him.
Okay.
That's all I have to say about that.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Herding Code. See you again next time. And now, I got to try to take my garbage out again because last time it refused to go outside.
Curse you, garbage.
Oh.
Is K. Scott there?
Oh, I'm here. I'm just, survived through two blizzards.
Wow.
There's so much snow here. I called 911 and they told me to call back in the spring. My snowblower has more miles on it than my car this week.
Matt Podwasaki sent me some pictures. It was just crazy. The snow was like piled up on top of his car, like taller than the car, you know?
Oh, it's insane. We've had like,
I saw a picture of him in waist deep drifts on either side when he was shoveling his sidewalk.
Yeah.
I talked to my travel agent today. She wanted to know if I wanted to get away to Siberia for the winter.
Someplace warmer.
What's he? I'm just glad you got it, and we completely avoided it because we're usually in your path. You know, we get it first, and then you get it several days after.
Right.
And we completely avoided it this time. We were lucky. We got about probably 4 or 5 inches, but that was about it.
Hmm.
See, I'm just jealous. I want snow. I want lots of it.
Well, we got a lot of it. There's so much snow here. I went to the pet store. All they had was seals and penguins.
It's a stand-up routine.
And that was food for the orca. Booyah.
I don't get it.
Too funny.
Well, should we do this thing? Or do you have some more jokes? I mean, that's cool, too.
Oh, no, we can. Did you want me to start?
Wait, isn't that my line? Let's do this thing, because I'm the Maverick.
And then, that's right.
And then John or K. Scott is supposed to say, I'm too old for this shit.
Question, is the alarm clock all set to go? The bird tweeting alarm clock?
Oh. It's
important. No, yeah. they've gone north for the winter.
It's too cold.
Oh, it is cold. The police here don't yell freeze. They just yell, go outside!
Oh, that's funny.